since everyone here this evening. We'll look tonight in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. In this particular passage at the beginning, Apostle Paul is looking back to the Old Testament and the people of Israel came out of Egyptian slavery, and they were wandering in the wilderness, and for 40 years God took care of them. And even when they were rebellious, God still took care of them, because he had made a promise that he was going to fulfill his promise to Abraham, that he was going to make of him a great nation, and ultimately that one would come through Abraham as his descendant that would be one to bless all of the world. So in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul is looking back to that. In verse 1 he says, "For I would not, brethren, have you to be ignorant that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea and were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all did eat the same spiritual food and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of the spiritual rock which followed them, and that rock was Christ." Let's skip down to verse 11. Verse 11 of the same chapter. He says, "Now these things happened unto them by way of example, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages were come." So Paul is writing to call their mind back to the Israelite people after they have been delivered from slavery in Egypt. And God was leading him. First he took them up to the promised land, and they refused to go in, refused to obey him. So God decreed that they would stay in the wilderness for 40 years till all of that generation over the age of 20 had died. That's how long it was going to be. So basically the first generation, the leaders of the first generation, the adults over 20, all of them were going to die, and only two of them didn't. That was Joshua and Caleb. But that's another part of the story. But the fact is that God destroyed them in the wilderness, that generation, and he rose up the next generation to go into the land of promise. So he's reminding their descendants, which was now 1,500 years later, of what God had did and done for them during that time. The purpose here was and is to show us the connection between God's care for his people in the Old Testament and also in the New, because we find there in chapter 10 and verse 4, he says, "For they drank of the spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ." But even more so, that God takes care of his people under the New Covenant. Yes, he provided them food and water and clothing and everything for the 40 years they were in the wilderness. But even more so, God cares for us today and provides more for us. In Romans chapter 15 and verse 4, the Bible says, "For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that through patience and comfort of the Scriptures we might have hope." So sometimes people say, well, we need to study the New Testament, not the Old Testament, because the New is what tells us how to be saved. Well, that's true, but Paul right here says there is a purpose for the Old Testament for us, even if we're not living under it. It is to show us what God did for his people from the very beginning all the way through to the coming of Christ and his death and resurrection and ultimately unto eternal life. So he says things that were written aforetime are written for our learning. We are to learn from these things. And he says that through patience and through comfort of the Scriptures, we might have hope. So we look at the what it says in 1 Corinthians 10 and in verse 4. It says, they did drink of all the same spiritual drink, for they drank of the spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. Well, we'll go back to the Old Testament, because over and over again, a recurring idea and theme in the Old Testament is that God is the rock, the authority, the power, the strength the protection. And that's what the term rock has to do with when it applies to God and God's way in the Old Testament. And we have a few passages we'll look at this evening. And of course, there's many more than these. But for example, Exodus chapter 13. Exodus chapter 13 and verse 21. When the Israelites finally were allowed to leave Egypt and God brought them out under the direction of Moses. And it says, "And the Lord went before them by day, a pillar of cloud, and to lead them by the way, and by night in a pillar of fire, to give them light, that they might go by day and by night. The pillar of the cloud by day, the pillar of fire at night, departed not from before them, from before the people." So here we see God manifested in the pillar of the cloud during the day to direct them, the pillar of fire at night to direct them if they are moving during that time. When it's dark, God directed them in that way. And so whenever the cloud or the pillar of fire stopped, that's where they stopped and that's where they set their camp. So God was in the rock. The power of the rock is a symbol of His care and His strength and His protection for His people. But also the pillar of fire and the pillar of the cloud was an example of God taking care of them. In fact, when they came down to the Red Sea and Pharaoh's army was now coming after them, God put the cloud in between the Egyptians and the Israelites so that the Egyptians could not get to them. And there was a time, of course, to part the Red Sea, and the Israelites went through on dry land. And when they did that then, we find that God caused the water to come back over the Egyptians. And so God's care, God as the rock of their salvation under the law of Moses, is emphasized over and over again. So we go now to Exodus chapter 14. Exodus 14, verse 21. It says, and he made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground. And the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left hand. There's a couple of things you read this, and all the times maybe we've heard of this and maybe seen movies where they depicted this happening and all of these things. But think about it for a moment. It says he made the sea dry land. Now, he didn't just pull the waters back and they had to slog through the mud knee deep all the way across. It was dry land when they went across. He parted the waters. And I can't begin to imagine what that must have looked like or what kind of an impression it must have made upon them that went through there. And so he said he made the sea dry land and the waters were divided. Well, that's impossible. You know, we know in this world that can't be done. But God did it. Because God has the power to do it. And so God took care of them in that way. And he says, and the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground. So God prepared that place for them to go across. They went across on dry ground all the way through. And we don't know exactly how many Israelites there were. There have been estimations of as many as 2 to 3 million people that came out of Egypt. Because they had been there 400 years. And so it's certainly possible that many. And it would take a long time to get them all the way through. But God did that. And so it says they went, and the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground. Now you think about it. It also would take faith on their behalf because they were willing to go through and the water was a wall on both sides of them. Now, they had to have faith that God wasn't going to let that water come back while they were walking across. And he didn't. Of course, he kept it for them. And so, it says, the waters were a wall unto them on the right hand and on the left. So he didn't just back it up on one side. He divided it in the middle. So the miraculous power of God is clearly demonstrated there, how he delivered them. So the idea, we go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 1, excuse me, chapter 10, and verse 1, he said, "For I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud, and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea." So in a sense, this was their baptism. This was their change from what they had been before. They go through the water. They didn't actually get in the water, but they went through it over to the other side. When we're baptized into Christ, that's what happens to us. Only we go down into the water and we come up out of it. So he says they were baptized into Moses. Well, we're baptized into Christ. So what God did for them physically, he does for us spiritually when we believe and obey the gospel. And so he says the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. And we know what happened next when all of the Israelites came through. Then Pharaoh and his army thought, well, we can do that. So they followed him in. And of course, God waited till Pharaoh's army got all the way in there. And then he brought the waters back over them. And so we read in Exodus chapter 15 and 16 and 17 of those things. And how when that was done, there was a great song of victory that came from the Israelites and praising God for what he had done for them. So Exodus chapter 17, Exodus 17 and verse 6, is the next passage we look at in light of this. And he says in chapter 10, verse 3 of 1 Corinthians, "And did all eat the same spiritual food and all drink the same spiritual drink?" In other words, God was not just dividing the waters for them. He was giving them food. He was giving them water. He made it so that their clothes did not wear out all during the time that they were in the wilderness. Their clothes and their shoes did not wear out. God made sure it didn't. But Exodus chapter 17 and verse 6 says, "Behold," this is God speaking, "I will stand before you there upon the rock in Horeb, and thou shalt smite the rock, and there shall come water out of it, that the people may drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. Of course, this is the first time that God told him what to do. They were murmuring and complaining, even though God was taking care of them every day. And they were murmuring, complaining, "You brought us out here, and we're going to die of thirst in the wilderness, and what are we going to do? Let's go back to Egypt." That was their attitude. But God said, "Behold," he told Moses, "I will stand before you there upon the rock in Horeb." This is close to Mount Sinai. Horeb is one of the names for Mount Sinai. He said, "You shall smite the rock." In other words, take your rod and you hit the rock with your rod. "And there shall come water out of it that the people may drink." And so God told him what to do. Moses obeyed the thing that God commanded him to do. He said, "Hit the rock," and the water began to come out. And it says, "And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel." In other words, this was not something that was done way back away from anybody. This was right there. They could see it. They could see what happened. Now, as far as they were concerned, they didn't know there was any water there. It was just dry desert. That's what it is today. But God caused the water to come out for them. And it says that Moses did so in the sight of Israel. Well, one of the purposes of miracles, there's several purposes for them, of course. One of them is to show the power of God, to show that he does care for his people, in this case, to give them water to drink, but also to show not only that the one who is doing God's will and performing this miracle, as Moses was told to do at this time, that he is the one that speaks from God. Why Jesus' miracles were used in Acts chapter 2 by the Apostle Peter as an example and showing this is the proof that Jesus was the Christ. In fact, Peter on the day of Pentecost in Acts chapter 2, he says, "You have crucified this one, even though he worked all of these miracles before you, even these things that you know that he did." They couldn't deny the miracles. They couldn't deny raise Lazarus from the dead. They couldn't deny he healed the sick and did all the other things that he did. And so we look at this passage in Exodus 17 and verse 6. So a completely dry desert there where they were, and God made water to come up out of this rock. Well, again, we go back to 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 4. It says, "And all did drink from the same spiritual drink, and they drank of the same spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ." Now think about it. Normally we think of Jesus Christ coming in the beginning of the first century, in the beginning of the what we call the New Testament. Well, actually, he was there on many occasions. And this, whenever God delivered them, and it says that rock followed them. It wasn't a literal physical rock that followed them around. It was the rock of the authority and power of God. It was the authority that Jesus Christ brought to them to deliver them, to give them food, to give them water, and all the protection and everything that they needed during this time. And so, he says, "Behold," Exodus 17, 6, "Behold, I will stand before you upon the rock in Horeb." God says, "I will be with you. You do what I command, and basically, I will take care of the rest." Well, God did not promise Moses what he was going to do, but he told him what to do in order to obey his command. And that's what happened. Now, we turn now to 1 Samuel chapter 7. 1 Samuel chapter 7 and verse 12. And it says, "Then Samuel took a stone and set it between Mizpah and Shin and called the name of it Ebenezer, saying, Hitherto has the Lord helped us." Now this is another stone, another rock that was a symbol. The word Ebenezer literally means the stone of help. In other words, God is in representing himself by the stone of help that Samuel took there. And, you know, we sing the song sometime, "Here I raise my Ebenezer." Well, Ebenezer is the rock of help. And that's what Samuel did here in 1 Samuel 7, verse 12. And Israel was going to have a great battle, and they needed God's help in winning the battle. Well, because of the stone of help, because Samuel the prophet put the stone there, and God gave them the victory. That was the symbol of God's power, of God's authority, and his power to give his people the ability to overcome their enemies. In this case, it was the Philistines. So that represented the rock, the power, the strength of God giving to them the victory over their enemies. So we look at this and realize all through the Old Testament, this term, this idea of God's care, his protection, his strength, his power, all of these things represented by this idea. And back we go back again to 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 4. He says that the rock that "For they drank of the spiritual rock that followed them, and the rock was Christ." In other words, now again, he wasn't a literal physical rock, but he was the rock of strength and power and everything else that brought the blessing to the people under the Old Testament. So how then do we apply that in the New Testament? Of course, 1 Corinthians 10 does part of that, but there are some other passages also. Turn back to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7, and passage we all are somewhat familiar with. Matthew chapter 7, verse 24. Now this is at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7 is the Sermon on the Mount. In chapter 7, verse 24, Jesus, at the end of his message, he says, "Everyone, therefore, that heareth these words of mine, and doeth them, shall be likened to a wise man who built his house upon the rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell, for it was not founded upon the rock. And everyone that heareth these words of mine, and doeth them not, shall be likened unto a foolish man, who built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came. The winds blew and smote upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall thereof. And we think about that and realize the truth of what Jesus was saying. So if you build your life and your ways on my words and my teaching, he says your house is not going to fall. It's always going to be there. It's going to be strong. Because the foundation, the rock of that foundation is there. And so his words were the foundation of the lives of those who were listening there and still for us today. Now, Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 4, it says there, the rock, his work is perfect, for all his ways are justice, a God of faithfulness without iniquity, just and right is he. So God is the rock, the foundation rock of all these things. So Jesus said, you know, if you're wise, you'll build upon this rock, this foundation for which even if the terrible things of life happen, it's not going to fall. But if you build upon the sand or any other kind of teaching, that spiritual house is going to be destroyed eventually, and it always will happen. So we go now from Matthew chapter 7 over to Matthew chapter 16. We're in Matthew 16 for a moment. Matthew 16, and begin about verse 13, Matthew 16, verse 13. Now when Jesus came into parts of Caesarea Philippi, he asked the disciples, saying, who do men say that the Son of Man is? And they said, some say John the Baptist, Elijah, and Jeremiah, and one of the prophets. And he said unto them, but who do you say that I am? So Jesus said, okay, he's talking to his disciples, his closest ones. He says, who does everybody say that I am? Some say, well, that you're, first of all, he says in verse 14, some say you're John the Baptist. Well, there even Herod the king thought Jesus at one time was John the Baptist brought back from the dead. Well, that was wrong. Some say Elijah. Why would they say Elijah? We go over to Isaiah chapter 40 and Malachi chapter 4, and it says that God's going to raise up Elijah to prepare the way for the Christ, the Messiah. So they thought he might be Elijah. Well, it wasn't. Of course, Jesus in Matthew 17, if you read on in this passage, you'll find they revealed to his disciples that John the Baptist was in fact the Elijah that was prophesied. So that wasn't right. It says others say Jeremiah or one of the prophets. Well, Jesus' teaching was very similar in many ways to the teaching of Jeremiah. He was calling the people back to God's will and back to God's authority. But then he says, but who do you say that I am? Okay, that's what everybody else says. Verse 16. And Simon Peter answered and said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered and said unto him, blessed are you, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood has not revealed it unto you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say unto you that you are Peter, that upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. I read that, and some people have concluded, since the name Peter means rock, that Jesus was telling Peter, I'm going to build the church upon you. Well, there are several religious organizations today that make that claim that the church was built upon Peter. And he was the first universal bishop or pope or whatever title they might have given him. Well, that's not what Jesus was talking about. He was talking about the confession that Peter made. Confession is, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. The confession, that was the rock. That's the foundation principle based upon who Jesus was and is. And so he said, upon this rock I will build my church. Well, the rock was the foundation principle that Jesus Christ is the Christ, the Son of God. Again, you go back to the name Peter. Now it's very similar to the word Jesus uses in the second part. But the word Peter comes from a word meaning a small stone, a pebble, one that you can pick up in your hand and, you know, throw at each other if you're kids or something. That's the kind of rock Peter was Jesus was talking about Peter. You're this little rock I could pick up and throw. But he says, but upon this rock, and this is a different word, it's the foundation rock. It is the stone, the ledge, or the foundation rock, the bedrock foundation of strength and power. It says, upon that rock, I'm going to build my church. And that's why he says the gates of Hades, the gates of hell, as some translations say, will not prevail against it. It can't keep it from happening, nor can it destroy it after it has started. And so he says then to Peter, I will give to you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. And whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. In other words, I'm going to give you the keys of the kingdom. Well, he wasn't literally going to give him a key and then let him open a door or something. He's talking about eventually, and he made the same promise later to the other apostles, I'm going to give you the key of the kingdom of heaven. On the day of Pentecost, they used that key, which is the preaching of the gospel of Christ, to open the door for all people to come to Christ. So we look at this, and we realize that Jesus Christ is, and the truth that he is, Jesus is the Christ, is the foundation rock of all of our faith. Now turn back once more to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 3. 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 10. Again, the Apostle Paul writing here. 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 10. He says, according to the grace of God which was given unto me, a wise master builder, I laid a foundation, and another builds upon it. But let each man take heed how he builds thereon. For other foundation can no man lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. He says, I was the master builder that was chosen to go out and start and preach the message of the gospel. He says others would come in and build more upon that. And he makes a reference later in 1 Corinthians about he and Silas and the work that they did. Paul's most important work was to go into a city and establish the work there. We know that Apollos was very good at coming along later and building upon that, upon the foundation that already started, and building up the church from there. But he says there, other foundation, verse 11, for other foundation can no man lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. So if we build upon any other foundation besides him, our life, our spiritual life, is going to be destroyed, and we're not going to be able to spend eternity with him. Now in Psalms chapter 62 and verse 7, the Bible says, with God is my salvation and my glory, the rock of my strength and the refuge of my soul in God. And so we realize that God said, well, he is the foundation, he is the rock, he is the strength. In Psalms 89 and verse 26, it says, he shall cry unto me, you are my Father, my God, and the rock of my salvation. And that's the writing of David. And David used that figurative language quite often, of the strength and the power and the rock being the things that protected God's people under the law of Moses. But even more so for us. Because if we build our life on the foundation of Jesus Christ, we're never going to be destroyed, and God will be with us now for all of eternity. Well, tonight, if you do have a need in your life, if you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, won't you come while we stand and we sing.